We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Election Night Coverage 2024 on American Family Radio. AFA President Tim Wildman, Vice President Ed Vitagliano, News Director Fred Jackson.
Wesley will be here. Walker will be here.
And the American Family News team bring you election returns and analysis from a Christian perspective.
We'll be up here for 5 or 6 hours.
Yes.
Yeah. On Election Night beginning at 6 Central, it's Election Night Coverage 2024 on American Family Radio. Jenna Ellis in the morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview. The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Well, it is Thursday, October 24th, and a lot of election news that we want to get to. But first, an update on the conflict in the Middle East. This coming from The Guardian, and yes, I realize that source, but still, the United States investigates leaked documents alleging Israel plans to attack Iran. U.S. officials say the documents appear to be legitimate, and the House Speaker Mike Johnson says the leak is very concerning. So he confirmed the investigation in remarks to CNN's State of the Union program on Sunday, saying that the leak was very concerning. Quote, there are some serious allegations being made there. The investigation's underway, and I'll get a briefing on that in a couple of hours. That was over the weekend. A U.S. official told the Associated Press, according to this article from The Guardian, the documents in question appeared to be legitimate, but The Guardian was not immediately able to verify their authenticity. So what exactly is going on here? Well, joining us now is Scott Uhlinger, who is a retired CIA and naval officer. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Jenna.
Yeah, so, you know, this is really fascinating, actually. And so, you know, what's going on with the leaked documents? I mean, that was Sunday, and now we're through most of the week. So what's the status of what we know about these leaked documents?
Well, the status of the documents is less important. Is important, but the main thing about this is that something I've actually talked about on television, on Middle Eastern television, more than 6 months ago, is the spies that the United States has within our own government who are spying on behalf of Iran. This is a real problem. What many people don't know is, for example, Robert Malley, who was the primary negotiator with Iran about nuclear weapons, the JCPOA agreement, which Trump scrapped and then Biden tried to reinstate. Robert Malley has lost his security clearance, and basically it's because the State Department hasn't moved forward with anything else. But the bottom line is the guy was working for the Iranians the whole time. So our primary negotiator with Iran was a spy for Iran. And now the person that the blame is going mostly to about this latest incident is a senior officer, a female Iranian American, who was the chief of staff of special warfare, of one part of special warfare in the Pentagon, is working for Iran as we speak. It has been known for more than a year. And this person has not only not lost their security clearance, they have maintained their job. This is unimaginable to an intel professional like myself, but this is par for the course with this incompetent administration.
That's incredible. I mean, and we know that Kamala Harris really hasn't done any press conferences basically for her whole campaign. And so, but there have been other Pentagon officials and others who have at least given, you know, some of these briefings. Have any of the pool correspondents asked questions about this?
Well, like I said, the documents, I'm sure are of concern. However, the silver lining within this is that Israel is well aware that this person is a spy for the Iranian government. And so I think that that has moderated what they are willing to share with the United States. In other words, they may share relatively important things, but very critical things I think the Israelis are not sharing with us simply because they know that we cannot be trusted. More on this. There are other people within the U.S. government, and I think actually this chief of staff, this female, her last name is Tubby Tabai. Her deputy is also implicated in this. I mean, and so this is more than one person. And actually, if you look at it, in the Obama administration was characterized by being disrespectful to United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, our key allies in the area, and sucking up to Iran. And this policy was continued with under Biden, and this is what made the entire war in the Middle East possible, because the United States was basically empowering Iran. This administration was empowering Iran by looking the other way while not enforcing sanctions and allowing Iran to collect in the order of $10 billion. And that $10 billion was used to arm Hamas and Hezbollah to murder Israelis. So we have a hand in this, and it is beyond disgraceful.
So is this what Speaker Johnson is talking about when he says there's some serious allegations being made and an investigation is underway? What exactly is the House, that's at least loosely under GOP control, investigating?
Right. They are investigating this. But this has been known to Congress for more than a year. Specifically, I mean, I've actually seen the email. Specifically, this woman was in correspondence with an officer in the Islamic Revolutionary Guard, which is Iran's version of the SS. She was in email correspondence with them. Unsanctioned email correspondence with an intelligence officer. I mean, so again, this is unbelievable stuff that this could be happening. And in a normal world, this incident alone would be the dominating issue in the presidential campaign, that this administration has traitors at the highest levels of the U.S. government. Oh, and by the way, here's another fun fact about this traitor. Her father. So, you know, I'm friends with a lot of Iranian Americans. They're the most loyal people to the United States, and they despise the regime. However, this woman, her father was not only, you know, a member of the regime, he was a senior advisor to a former president of Iran. I mean, it's unbelievable that this person was even looked at to be given a security clearance. But I'm sure that happened under the Obama administration because they are Iranian sympathizers. And then it just continued under Biden.
Wow. And I'm speaking with Scott Uhlinger, who is a retired CIA and naval officer. And, you know, this is just a wild uncovering. And I mean, this is the kind of thing that Hollywood movies are based off of. I mean, yeah. And so now here we are under 2 weeks before the election, and this is something that goes to the heart of national security. Why isn't at least the Trump campaign making a bigger deal out of this, even if legacy media won't?
Right. Well, I think that Trump, Trump campaign, there are so many other sound bites that the Trump campaign can use, because, you know, I'm firmly convinced if you wanted to destroy the United States, what would you have done differently than this administration? This administration has done everything consistent with destroying this country. So the Trump campaign is pretty busy covering all the other, you know, deaths of 1,000 cuts. This is, you know, the 997th cut. And so it just doesn't, it's not making it on the screen as often. But obviously it's important that Congress investigate this. But more important, these people need to be put in prison. Again, given Jonathan Pollard has been in jail since the early 1980s, I think since 85. He was guilty of spying for Israel. He has been in prison since 1985. He has life imprisonment for espionage. So that's what we're looking at. This woman should be facing at least 30 years to life in federal prison. And yet she continues on her job. It's unbelievable. And we need to see justice done, because I can't, you know, as someone, as a veteran and as someone who served in the intelligence community, this absolutely turns my stomach.
Yeah. I mean, this is beyond incompetence of the Biden-Harris White House. I mean, this is something, as you mentioned, that it sounds like is tantamount to, espionage and treason against the United States. And, you know, all of these headlines and everything that you're describing here, Scott, is absolutely wild. And I'm glad that you've joined for this update, because even as I was reading the headlines, looking, from The Guardian, which is far leftist outlet that we read, to, even Fox News on this, Everyone is talking about the leaked documents showing Israel's preparation for possible strike on Iran. Like, that's where the headlines are going, saying, oh, Israel might invade Iran or strike on Iran. And I think they're missing the far bigger picture here.
Right. Other important thing I want to bring up about Israel's war is that Israel is doing our work for us. Israel has liquidated like the top 10 terrorists on the U.S. watch list. Like, literally, we offer $3 or $10 million for the death or whatever, or capture of these terrorists. Israel has eliminated the top 10. They've eliminated the mastermind of the 1983 Beirut barracks attack, which, by the way, the anniversary of that horrible event was yesterday, where 240 U.S. Marines and sailors were killed by Hezbollah. And that was unavenged for 40 years. And so finally, those butchers were eliminated by the Israelis. And ironically, right, all these terrorists were eliminated in the very areas where Kamala Harris said specifically, well, she looked at the maps and she didn't think that Israel should go in there.
Yeah, this is just incredible. And, to think about the consequences of this election. I mean, so many people are just thinking about, the economy and the border, and, rightly so. Those are the top topics. But, this is utterly disqualifying for any administration. I don't care if it's Democrat, Republican, whatever. I mean, to have this type of person who still has a security clearance, I mean, that's unprecedented and shouldn't happen. And so what are the next steps then? I mean, now that this has actually been brought to light, I mean, is there pressure that Congress can put on the White House?
I think that certainly they can. And then, of course, when Trump wins, because I firmly believe he's going to win, then these people will be, of course, be pulled out of their positions, which would probably be normal politically. But then also they should absolutely be charged for treason to the United States. And basically, this also underlines a lot of key problems that the United States has for more than a decade, and that is like the U.S. clearance procedure for top security clearances. It has been in disarray for more than a decade. It's an absolute disgrace, and it needs to be cleaned up, because there are many people who should not be having security clearances and should be removed. And this is a part of the general movement, like with Elon Musk and Trump, for massive reform, not only in the intelligence community in the Pentagon, but also throughout the government, because this is the emblem of government incompetence right now, along with FEMA in North Carolina, by the way. But, these kinds of things, the American people are demanding change. Why should their tax money go to, illegal aliens? Or why should their tax money go to empowering Iran, a country which despises us and calls us the great Satan? And
yeah,
so I
absolutely
think you're going to see a lot of massive changes.
Well, I hope so. And that was, what Trump ran on in 2016, which is draining the swamp. And obviously, as you well know, there are differences between the political appointees and then just the bureaucrats that that stay on from administration to administration. And, I think that Trump, when he first took office, didn't really know the depth and the breadth of the swamp. And I think a lot of the American public didn't even really know. And that's why we do need reform. And hopefully, if Trump gets another 4 years, there will be a lot lot of not just personnel changes around him and his own staff, but, you know, a lot of these incompetent and frankly, you know, anti-America bureaucrats that are in Washington, D.C. in these high positions will lose their positions, and there can be some system of reform because we absolutely need it. So Scott Uhlinger, we're already out of time, but thank you so much for dropping by. I mean, this story was even bigger than what I thought it was, and so I really appreciate your commentary. And you know, this is why, for everyone listening, this is why voting matters. I mean, it's not just kind of the top level topics that you hear the pundits talk about, and we're going to get to that in the next segment about you know, Kamala Harris is calling Trump Hitler and, you know, some of these sort of back and forth. There are really consequences on every single issue at every single level. So make sure that you are getting out and voting your values. And we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. Could the fate of America's children be tied to the fate of our nation itself? Much like the abortionists who end the lives of the unborn, the left is determined to undermine the pro-life movement. First, they target the babies. Then they come for the rest of us. Preborn stands as a beacon of hope for the most defenseless among us, preborn babies. Every day, Preborn's network of clinics rescue, on average, over 200 babies while surrounding expectant mothers with God's love and offering a free ultrasound. Rescuing the miracle of life has never been more crucial as we navigate this time of moral decline in our nation. Will you join Preborn in protecting the least among us? For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound and give a mother the chance to choose life, not only for her baby, but for herself. An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR. Preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Well, as Kamala Harris and Donald Trump are making their closing arguments to the American people, this coming from Blaze Media, Vice President Kamala Harris admitted during an interview with MSNBC that she wants mass amnesty for the millions of illegal immigrants who have come to the United States during the Biden-Harris administration. In that interview, she also compared Donald Trump to Hitler. Listen to this. Cut three.
And let's be clear about who he considers to be the enemy from within. Anyone who refuses to bend a knee or dares to criticize him would qualify in his mind as the enemy within, like judges, like journalists, like nonpartisan election officials. It is deeply troubling and incredibly dangerous that Donald Trump would invoke Adolf Hitler, the man who is responsible for the deaths of 6 million Jews and hundreds of thousands of Americans. All of this is further evidence for the American people of who Donald Trump really is. This is a window into who Donald Trump really is, from the people who know him best, from the people who worked with him side by side in the Oval Office and in the Situation Room. And it is clear from John Kelly's words that Donald Trump is someone who, I quote, certainly falls into the general definition of fascist, who in fact vowed to be a dictator on day one and vowed to use the military as his personal militia to carry out his personal and political vendettas. Donald Trump is increasingly unhinged and unstable.
So while Kamala's closing message is basically Trump equals Hitler, she is trending about 20 points down compared to the last five elections for Democrats in a very crucial demographic, which is the black voter. So Daily Wire's Cabot Phillips actually went to Georgia and spoke to some voters in that demographic. And this is incredible what some of them had to say. This is cut four.
They want to make this a race war. It's not. We got to get past that. If you start your own business, Trump is the man for you. But if you want to live off the government, then that would be definitely be probably be Kamala. But I'm not trying to live off the government. That's why I started my own small little business.
Country has been ran horribly the past 4 years. Like, when Trump was in office, things were a lot better. The economy was better. She's consistently flip-flopping on topics and policies. One day she stands for one thing, the next day she stands for something totally different. You know, Trump, he has a strong personality, but I believe that he's more genuine in the things that he says because he sticks by what he says.
Even though he says, like, sarcastic things, I feel like his views on, like, protecting the border are on point. That's just something I agree with. And then his capitalistic ways, I know capitalism isn't everybody's favorite, but I think it's good.
I like Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, of course, but they haven't been doing a good job. When Trump was in power, he was doing a much better job with the economy and dealing with foreign affairs, and there was no wars. Everybody was making money. The economy's been going down and people losing their jobs for other people that are coming in the country.
All right, so Trump's message seems to be we're going to actually make America better. We'll reverse the trends from the Biden-Kamala administration. So whose argument is more persuasive? Well, at least if you look at the trends of some of these crucial key demographics, even just among Black voters, that could be outcome determining, especially in a state like Georgia, where approximately, according to one report I read, about 30% of voters are in that demographic, in that swing state. So let's welcome in Mark Lauder, who is the Chief Communications Officer for the America First Policy Institute. And Mark, we're coming down to the wire here. And what do you think of the two closing arguments?
Well, I mean, it's pretty clear that Kamala has given up on joy and vibes. And now her only message is Trump. Hate Trump, hate Trump, fear Trump. That, you know, it's just about Trump. You even saw it last night. On the CNN town hall, Anderson Cooper, you know, asks her questions and she's like, well, let's talk about Donald Trump. You know, she can't answer the questions about what she stands for. She just wants to make it about Trump. And Trump's closing message is basically, look, Kamala and Joe Biden broke it. I'll fix it. I did it once before. I'll do it again. And he has the benefit of actually people knowing that he did it. And even those clips that you heard earlier, you know, people know, regardless of whether you like the way he said everything or tweeted or, you know, all the other stuff. Well, you know, stuff was cheaper. You know, the border was more secure and the world wasn't at war under Donald Trump. In fact, we had historic peace deals being negotiated in the Middle East.
Yeah, and one of the key contrasts that you're seeing in some of these town halls where, you know, Donald Trump gets into substantive policy and, you know, maybe he tends to go on for a little bit in terms of his answer. You can tell that he knows what he's talking about off the top of his head. And yet Kamala Harris said in that same CNN town hall last night, she said, quote, I may not have the answer as soon as you ask it about a specific policy sometimes because I'm going to want to research it. I'm kind of a nerd sometimes, and then cackles. And she says, you know, I confess. I'm sort of wondering, Mark, has Kamala actually read her own website?
Probably not. No.
I mean, you just have to wonder. Like, this is her full. This has been her full-time job for the last almost 4 years, and then she was in the Senate before that. I mean, she's not new to politics, and then she's asked some of these very basic questions on policy, and even in the Brett Baer interview, she just referred listeners back to her website, and I'm thinking, you know, clearly your staff just put your policies up there. She doesn't even know what her own policies are. I mean, it's
crazy.
Well,
the problem she has is that what she actually believes is what she ran on in 2019. You know, open borders, decriminalization, amnesty, which she talked about even this week, I think probably by mistake on the Telemundo town hall, and the Green New Deal, all of that nonsense. And then she goes out and she says, well, I don't believe that, but my values haven't changed. And so here are some scrubbed, like, she doesn't know what to say because she can't say what she believes. She can't put on her website what she believes. So she's just trying to make people believe that, well, you know, my values haven't changed, but I'm not that bad. Talk about Trump.
Yeah. And it seems like that's her closing message. But According to at least early voting, Republicans are showing up in record numbers. And obviously, you know, you can't tell exactly how they're voting, but there is at least some indication by party affiliation with some of the things that we know based on the early voting. What kind of indication does that give you in terms of where are the swing states positioned and the overall election?
Well, I'm very encouraged by it, but with a caveat. And so I love the fact that I'm seeing all of the increase in numbers in both percentages in terms of raw vote totals. And we're not going to win the early vote. We just have to cut their lead. But I want to caution about that to say if it's just Election Day voters who are voting early now, then that doesn't change the math. You know, and you and I have talked about this so many times before, Jenna. You know, if you get a million votes in a state or a city or a county or whatever the number may be, and I don't care as a political operative if I get a million votes on Election Day or 200,000 votes early and 800,000 votes on Election Day, it's still a million votes. What we need to do is go out and find 200,000 more votes, low propensity voters, people who wouldn't come to the polls if it weren't for someone else coming to them and saying, hey, have you registered? Have you gotten your early ballot? I know you don't think your vote counts or it's rigged or whatever the case may be, that, you know, you're busy, but getting you there, that's the key. Getting those people off the couch, you know, to the early voting, mail-in voting, whatever that might be, that's where the difference is. And we may not know the answer to that until after we see the total votes and the votes that come in on Election Day versus the early returns. So I think we just got to keep hammering home in these next 12 days that friends don't let friends vote alone. Go find people who otherwise wouldn't go vote and either get them there on Election Day or make sure they know how to vote early.
I'm speaking with Mark Lauder, who is the Chief Communications Officer for the America First Policy Institute. And, you know, you mentioned the math, and absolutely that's correct. But with some of these stats, like Kamala Harris possibly losing the Democrats' grasp on the black vote by as much as, you know, 20 percentage points, which is just a terrible turnout for her. And then also the get out and vote that the RNC and the Trump campaign has done with adding new registered voters in some of these swing states, which obviously registration, as you mentioned, doesn't mean they're actually getting out and casting a ballot. But with some of these indicators, do you think that the polls are actually accurate, that it is such a razor thin margin? Because I'm seeing, you know, commentary on social media and even emails we get from listeners from both sides going, this can't possibly be this close. But both sides think it won't be that close in favor of their own candidate. So where do you think it actually sits right now?
Well, again, as I said, I look at it as a math problem. And if we go back into 2020, and I'm looking at the Real Clear Politics average right now, in the seven battleground states, Joe Biden was leading in all seven battleground states. And he was leading anywhere from 2 points all the way up to 8-9 points in the battleground states. Donald Trump leads in all seven battleground states right now. I mean, even in 2016, Hillary Clinton led in six of the seven battleground states. Donald Trump leads in all seven of them right now. And it's not even a close shift. I mean, it's 5, 6, 7 points difference between where we were in 2020 and in 2016 to where we are today. And so when you look at these states between 2016, 2020, that came down to tens of thousands of votes, and you see a 5, 6, 7 point shift, that tells me that the lead is much higher than that. Plus, add to the fact that the polls have never accurately measured Trump's support. They've always underestimated it. But even if they get it right this year, he's still leading in all seven of those states. And so that to me says it's his race right now, but we can't rest on our laurels. You know, we've got to go out. We've got to double down. We got to make sure we get all that vote out. And for people who want to start, you know, popping champagne because of the polls or the early voting, I remind them of the great Toby Ziegler from, you know, from the West Wing, who basically said, why would you tempt the fates of the whatever from high on top of the thing? Go outside, spit, turn around three times and spit. Do not count this thing until it's over.
Yes. Well, I'm reminded of the whole, you know, don't count your chickens before they hatch, or maybe don't count your ballots before, you know, they're actually turned in is the lesson. But with that, those percentage points, I mean, being up, you know, 6, 7, 8 points in some of these swing states, I mean, that is a really big margin, especially if, as you mentioned, Mark Lauder, the polls have always underestimated the enthusiasm and the support for Trump. So comparing that lead to what we saw in 2016 and 2020, where mainly are those percentage points coming from? I mean, is that new voters? Is it more converts from people who voted Democrat twice and now they're turning to Trump, or do we know?
Well, I think, you know, again, going off the polls, and if that's what turns out to happen on Election Day, you saw it, you mentioned it, Jenna. I think it was the USA Today Suffolk poll from earlier this week. Kamala is down 20% with black voters. You know, in 2020, we know Donald Trump got 8% of the black vote. That poll has him at 17%, so more than double. We've also seen a 20-point drop from her with the Hispanic vote. We've seen from other polling, you know, about a 10% increase again. So he's increasing by 10%. Black vote, Hispanic vote. We see a 10% increase with the union vote. I saw one poll that showed a 12% jump, doubling his support with young voters. You know, that's where these numbers are coming from. And it doesn't have to be a win. You don't have to win the black vote, or although he was winning the Hispanic vote or the union vote or the young people's vote. But when you cut into those leads, close that margin by 10%, when these last two elections came down to 43,000 votes in three states in 20, 80,000 votes in three different states in 2016, and you see 10% more here, 10% more there, 12% more there, 10% more there, it all starts to add up. And unless she's going to offset it with some major gain in another demographic, I'm not sure that the math works for her that she can overcome that kind of deficit.
Well, you know, she got Eminem's endorsement yesterday. So, I mean, that clearly is going to put her up
that
in some of these.
That changes everything then. You know,
right?
Taylor and Eminem, yeah.
You know, that's going to put her up in
Jason Aldean.
Key demographics. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I mean, while she's getting all these celebrity endorsements, I'm not really sure that that's moved any of the needles at all for her. But so in the last, you know, 10-day push, what type of messaging do you think the Trump campaign needs to have? And where do you think that they'll focus in terms of getting, you know, that 10% or even just a few percentage points in key demographics?
I think you just keep leaning in on the economy. You keep leaning in on the border. Those are the two big issues. She can't answer those questions. She's not even trying anymore. I mean, I hear she's having a big rally or a big event next week on the Ellipse to mark January 6th. Well, you know, as I said on CNN the other day, if January 6th or even, say, the Dobbs-Roe decision are your deciding factors, you decided a long time ago.
Yeah, that's a great point.
This is not new information. So if you're the last 3, 4, 5% of people who may be undecided, it's because Roe and January 6th didn't push you over the edge. So what's it going to be? And I think it's going to remind people that the things were cheaper, border was secure, world was safer, and compared to what we have going on right now, Kamala can't even say she would do anything differently than Joe Biden. And, well, two-thirds, three-quarters of the American people think our country's headed on the wrong track. That's not the winning answer.
Yeah, that's a great point, that it doesn't seem like she's trying to go after some of those undecideds, at least in, you know, ways that might benefit her campaign. I mean, I would love to see him. We're already out of time. Mark Lauder, thanks so much. You can follow him on X, and he's the chief communications officer for AFPI. I've said repeatedly, I would love to see both sides, but I would love to see the Trump campaign with some of the voters that are not turning out actually try to win the evangelical vote and get some of these projected 35 million voters as churchgoers that have said that they're going to sit out 2024. So don't be one of those. Go out, vote your values. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And well, of course, the focus has been largely on the presidential race and 2024. And then even when we've gotten to some of the ballot initiatives, one of the top topics here has been, of course, on the abortion regulation amendments. There are so many other things, including election integrity initiatives and other things on the ballots in many states that are very concerning. And so wherever you are a registered voter, make sure that you know what propositions and initiatives are on your ballot. Be informed. Vote your values. You can always go to AFAaction.net and look at our free voter guide there in terms of initiatives. But here in the state of Florida, my home state, there is Amendment 3 is on the ballot, and this would not just legalize marijuana, but it would have a really devastating impact on public use and also on kids and even health in schools. So joining me now to discuss is Florida Commissioner Manuel Diaz. So good morning, Commissioner. And, you know, I know that you and the governor's office as well are very strongly opposed to Amendment 3. What's your reason for that?
Well, first of all, great to be back with you, Jenna. And this is an important topic, especially when it comes to education. Being, you know, Commissioner of Education in Florida, we have, you know, over 3 million public school students. And this, first of all, this marijuana amendment is clearly a monopoly amendment because it's supported by a company spending over $100 million just to have a monopoly. This isn't, you know, people being able to grow their own, have any kind of freedom. It's just funneling money to one corporation, and we've seen what that's done in states like Colorado. But when we're talking about the impact on kids, I mean, this will make marijuana more accessible to our kids. When people are looking at this amendment in Florida, they have to understand you're amending the Constitution, and this prevents any restrictions on time, place, and manner of use. So you're talking about, you know, kids having access to this, people being around schools, around shopping centers, around movie theaters. There's no restrictions because it handcuffs the legislature from being able to put rules into place. And if you've walked through Las Vegas or you've gone through Colorado, the stench of marijuana is everywhere. And it's bad for society overall. It's bad for the economy. And it's definitely bad for kids, Jenna. We know the dangers of marijuana during developmental years with students.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Colorado is my former home state. And unfortunately, you know, I was there when we passed Colorado's Amendment 64, which was to legalize marijuana. And how that has changed the state over the last decade has been devastating in terms of higher incidence of DUIDs or driving under the influence of drugs and co-administration with alcohol. I mean, even the last time that I went there to visit family and they were dropping me off at the Denver airport, literally in that lane, you could smell the stench of marijuana. They're even, you know, buses that pick up people so that they can get high on their way to the ski slopes. I mean, it's just, it's absolutely ridiculous. It's totally devastating. And you're right as well that this would, this is not just legislation. This would enshrine a so-called right in the state constitution, and it would make it very difficult down the road for the legislature to actually put really important guardrails on this, especially as you mentioned for kids. And so so I'm speaking with Florida's Education Commissioner Manny Diaz Jr. And when we talk about legalizing marijuana, especially in the context of kids getting access and public use and even secondhand, you know, a lot of people think, oh, this is just like, you know, the pot that you grow in your backyard and it's fine and it's really low concentration levels of THC. I mean, some of these things, according to some of the doctors I've even interviewed on this show, say, you know, some of the synthetics, we're talking about, you know, 99% concentration of THC. I mean, these are really dangerous drugs.
Yeah, I mean, this is not your grandfather's, you know, marijuana. This is not the pot you saw in the 70s and 80s. This is something that is so concentrated, and they continue to create these hybrids, right, that are stronger and stronger. And the problem that happens with this, Jenna, as you know, is once first of all, it doesn't belong in the Constitution. You know, in a republic and in this kind of government, if you want to have these kind of things, you should have it go through the legislature, which are, you know, representative of the people, and have it pass and have regulations. When you put something in the Constitution, which is supposed to be a framework, it's not supposed to be, you know, smoking pot. I mean, really. So this is something that then creates a downstream effect You know, it's kind of like the broken windows effect, where if you're saying it's legal now, what happens to the black market? We've seen that the black market increases in all the places where this has been legalized because people feel like they're not breaking the law. If somebody does catch me, what are they going to really do to me? Because marijuana is legal in the state. So how's the police going to enforce this? And so that starts that slippery slope again with no restrictions on time and place. Imagine having folks, you know, across the street from a school smoking marijuana, at the mall, you know, across from the movie theater where there are kids, and there's nothing anybody can do about it because it's enshrined in the Constitution. I think that Florida, under Governor DeSantis' leadership, was responsible in implementing medical marijuana in a way that had guardrails, right? In a way that people who really felt like they could use it as medicine can have access to it. And look, do it in the privacy of your home. That's fine. But when you're talking about this, just blowing it open, and again, let's not forget that it's just a windfall for this one company that's spending. You know, when somebody's spending $100 million on a constitutional amendment, you need to look, you know, it's like they say, follow the money.
Yeah, and you know, and you're absolutely right, Commissioner, that this type of corporate interest is going after an enshrined right in the state constitution instead of legislation. And I'm seeing this, you know, all across the country, that leftists and also, you know, the dark money special interest groups are getting more savvy to go around the protections of the people's actual right to be represented by state legislatures by going to these citizens initiatives, and they can be very misled. And thankfully in the state of Florida, we have a 60% threshold. So if it's only 40% plus one that votes no, then, you know, these amendments will be defeated. But right. This type of process of a citizens initiative to bypass the legislature, I think that that's actually very dangerous.
Yeah, it's been perverted. And look, it should be hard to amend the Constitution. It should be hard because that's why you have, it's a framework. That's why you have a legislature. But look, this means, you know, to make it clear to people out there, this amendment allows a person to carry up to 3 ounces of marijuana, which is equivalent to over 100 joints on their person at one time, Jenna. I mean, just think about that. Just to put it in perspective, you can have 100 joints on you, And there's nothing that law enforcement can do. Why are you walking around with 100 joints or 50 joints? This is not about a person growing marijuana at their home and smoking in private. You're not even allowed to. You're not allowed to grow your own. This has to go through these companies that already have a license and that are already in the state. It's a monopoly. But again, I'm really concerned about the dangers that it poses to our kids, to our schools. It's just something that, you know, we've seen, like you said, it doesn't work in Colorado. It doesn't work. It hasn't worked anywhere. And I'm afraid that it's coming to Florida if this passes. The other thing they lie about is they're talking about all this funding for schools. Well, nobody has had a conversation with me at the Department of Education of any funding that would come to our schools with this. Again, I think you're talking about an amendment that is just completely deceptive to the public.
That's really fascinating because, you know, so many people want to say, oh, look at this, you know, bright, shiny collateral consequence and don't look at the actual damage that this amendment would actually cause. And so what do you think are the other big misleading issues that advocates of this amendment are suggesting that the public and especially parents should know?
Well, look, again, I think the biggest thing is that this means smoking marijuana at our beaches, on our streets, around, you know, our theme parks. I think of the central part of the state, around apartment complexes, around schools. This is written in a way where there's no restrictions on time and place. There's no plan to allocate money to any education and certainly not to bolster drug rehab programs, hire more police. You know, none of that is in the amendment. What's in the amendment is the ability of someone to basically carry as much marijuana as you would expect a drug dealer to carry and have no repercussions. I think it's just, you know, the initial shiny object where you say, well, you know what, it's already legal medically, let's just do it and take the taxes. Medical marijuana is very different. You have to have a card. There are some restrictions there. The legislature has the time and place, again, for two reasons, because of the social ills, because of the damages to kids. But let's think about it from our republic and structure point of view. Do we really want to be putting these things in the Constitution where they don't belong, where it's, you know, it's very difficult for anybody to change, and the legislature has no ability to regulate it? So I think that those things, if a voter is just thinking rationally, that should give them complete pause when it comes to this amendment. And like you said, fortunately in Florida, it requires 60%, and I'm glad it's hard because, again, the Constitution should be hard to amend.
It absolutely should be. And I wish that more voters were more educated on, you know, what exactly the consequences of these types of amendments and not just legislation would be. I mean, even in conversations I've had with, you know, friends or people who've written into the show saying, you know, well, tell me more about this bill. And I'm saying, you know, no, this isn't what it is. It's not legislation. And that is a very important point. But when you're talking about, you know, time, place and manner restrictions and all that. So under Amendment 3, if this passes, just for instance, if a parent, say, who came to pick up their child from school wanted to carry, you know, joints of marijuana or even smoke right outside of school, I mean, that would just be permissible?
Yeah, I mean, under the amendment, there is no time, place, and manner restrictions, including in the amendment. So now you're talking about putting in something in the Constitution that could potentially clash with statutes that don't allow drugs around schools. I mean, how do you reconcile that? Why are we opening the door to allow that to happen? And look, even worse than that example, having someone, an uncle, somebody that just went to pick up the school that's sitting outside of school smoking a joint because they can, or even having, you know, other individuals that have graduated from school and like to hang around, that happens around campuses sometimes, smoking marijuana on the street corner when you have kids coming out of school. That's, it's just not desirable. It's a problem. And number two, access just becomes much easier. It doesn't matter what anybody tells you, Jenna. They can tell you, well, you know, the black market. No, when you make something acceptable in society, it starts to become more accessible, right? And then the stigma is gone and kids think it's okay. The danger, not just from smoking, but think about these gummies and how potent they are, right? How much that's evolved. And for a high school student or just a teenager to be enticed or, you know, accidentally have access to this and take it thinking it's just a gummy, nothing's going to happen, you know, you can end up with schizophrenia, all kinds of things, panic attacks. You don't want that. I mean, you want to have the ability to control time and place of these things. You want a well-regulated industry where people that need it for medical reasons can, but we already have that in Florida, Jenna. We don't need to expand this to make it the wild, wild west of marijuana.
Yeah, we definitely don't want Florida to look anything like Colorado or California. And, you know, you mentioned Central Florida and a lot of these theme parks where, you know, one of the biggest benefits of Florida and, you know, part of the reason we don't have a state income tax is because of tourism, and families come to these parks with, you know, little kids and their families. And if these theme parks are required to have, I mean, would they have to have a smoking section and all of that? I mean, and to have what you were talking about, gummies, you know, if somebody who's high drops something, which I could absolutely see happening, then, you know, that just becomes very easy for a kid to pick up. I mean, you know, what are there any types of parameters, or would that just have to be litigated?
No, I imagine it's litigated because the amendment doesn't provide for any. It handcuffs ties the hands of the legislature. You know, as you talk about Florida, we've been so guarded as a state, right, because of our family atmosphere and tourism and that industry, that we've been so guarded even with gaming, right? Gaming has been so regulated and guarded in the manner that it's been done in the state because the state, everybody wanted to protect the family images. They forget gaming. If you just have, you know, this marijuana smoking going on all over the place, what happens to your family atmosphere and your theme parks and your state, your state parks, your beaches? I mean, so those people that were worried about gaming, that's nothing when you compare it to what this is going to turn into if you look at what's happened in the states that have legalized it like this.
Yeah, so well said. And I appreciate everything that you are doing to get the word out and encouraging people to see the actual consequences of something like this. Because I've seen a lot of people on social media saying, well, as a veteran, this has helped me, and some of those other, one-off stories and all of that. But they're not really thinking, in my view, of the damage that this would really cause to the state overall, and especially to children. And, just like any other controlled substance, there is never any reason why children should be able to have just really easy access to this. And that's exactly what would happen. So Commissioner, Florida Education Commissioner Manny Diaz Jr., always appreciate you stopping by and giving your insights. And so Florida, this is so important. If you're listening, you're not in Florida, but friends or family members who are voters here in this state, please encourage them to vote no on Amendment 3. And again, having come from Colorado, I'm very strongly opposed to this because I saw the damage it did to my former home state. And anywhere that this type of initiative is on the ballot, as Manny mentioned, it's just a big corporate interest, and they don't care.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.